And of course, we got the trends analyst with us, Gerald Celente. This hour, we're going to take phone calls with him, your calls, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Gerald, you're talking about the mystery trend, what sounds like food shortages all around this planet.
Food shortages and food opportunities. And but one of the things I was also talking about is this new legislation, this Senate Bill 510. And what it's going to do, it's going to impose draconian regulations that are going to be enforced on, once again, the smaller farmer, the working people, the entrepreneur. Because here, let's get this straight. We just saw what happened this past year with a half a billion, that's with a B, eggs that were recalled from that Iowa so-called farm, you know, how the chicken coop concentration camp. And you know how many times the FDA was out there in the last year? How about none?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So what they're going to do, because the way things go right now, is you have this revolving door of industry into government and government into industry. So the big guys are given the free ride or loopholes that they can get through. And also this legislation, it does nothing to control poultry or meat. And, of course, those are the big processors. So what this is going to do is put another nail in the coffin of the family farmer. Because when you read the regulations and see the companies, by the way, that were behind supporting this legislation, you can see where it's going. Some of them, for example, the snack food industry, Kraft. It's all of the agribusiness, ConAgra and others that are behind it. So we're going to start seeing a lot of action in this field. Having said that, however, the demand for clean foods is going to be huge, and not only in the U.S., they're just even having now, as we're speaking, a huge egg recall in Germany. So worldwide, a high, high demand level of quality food. And by the way, that's the business to get in at every level, is quality. Less is more. And that's what America used to be known for. It's high quality, not its bottom line thinking.
Okay, let's go to the calls. We'll go to Tom in Mount Clemens, Michigan, first-time caller. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Do you remember during the Balkan Wars when the United States bombed the Chinese embassy in Belgrade?
I do.
They kept playing back how, you know, Bill Clinton said, "I apologize, I apologize." And the scuttlebutt was he was showing that the United States was still in control because the Chinese premier had just recently been to Washington, and they were all saying it looked like Clinton was kowtowing to him, and they were, like, putting some heat on him. Is there any truth to that?
There may well be truth to it. You know, you can never say, you know, they'll play any kind of games they want. But here's the deal. The Chinese are going to kowtow to no one anymore, particularly, as I said, when you look at their new missile defense systems and their new stealth aircraft and the size of their army. And let's, you know, let's call it what it is. You know, the American military right now is just another branch of the government in the sense of their inability to do anything properly. You know, this was a military that once defeated the Germans, you know, in World War II and these atrocious battles and Japan in the South Pacific, and they can't win in Afghanistan or Iraq. You know, so no, China, nobody's going to tell China what to do. That's the bottom line.
All right, next up we go to Bill in South Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hey, Bill, your turn.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I just wonder if anyone, I'm thinking the same things along the line as your guest and your previous guest, except for several things I disagreed with her, such as why can't we all get along? I mean, the planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and Pennsylvania should pretty much explain that. Is there a website or should someone create a website, which I'm considering doing, starting off with a land donation in case of an emergency in one part of the country that people from another part of the country could go to, that you can farm on and has flowing water, and then other people volunteer to go to that site and volunteer their services and be allowed in after a interrogation of some sort by a professional of some sort, hopefully, that will volunteer. And in other words, set up a society, several, I would think, around the country, depending on where a some sort of anarchy may occur. Am I making sense? I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself clearly.
Well, you know, those kind of things are huge undertakings. And you know, these intentional communities, you know, they sound good on paper, but in practice things work very differently in trying to get people to agree to many different things. But on the survival note, you know, the preppers are out there doing that now. There are a lot of people out there that are planning for the worst to happen, to bring a whole section of the country over to some place or community. You know, that's a huge undertaking.
Most of the secure sites that are being built as we speak are for the people that have the money to go to live in. And most people cannot afford to build an underground bunker. So I'm talking about a simple place with some farmland and some flowing water. And my brother suggested to me that it should be all people that you know to begin with, but you need virtually everyone, including law enforcement, fire departments, you know, everything that we now have in our cities to participate in. I know it's a huge undertaking, but it would be something, I think, to consider for people to survive and just call it surviving together or something like that on a website.
Well, again, you know, if you had the energy to do it, it is a huge undertaking, and good luck to you. Wait, look, you know, you have nothing to lose by trying.
What have you heard about FEMA camps? Anything, Gerald?
Well, you know, the same thing I guess that everyone hears, and that, you know, the information seems to be real, and then it seems to be sketchy. So, you know, I'm just not 100% sure. But I do know that, again, going back to what we were talking about before, when we see what they're doing with Homeland Security and telling people to rat out their neighbors, I think they're preparing for a breakdown of society. Because even they, I mean, look at the Obama administration. Remember Larry Summers, the head of the economic czar they had there?
Right.
Remember, you can never say his name without calling him the brilliant Larry Summers. Well, the brilliant Larry Summers jumped ship. And then who was his other number two economic advisor? Christina Roma. That Obama rat jumped ship. And who was the third economic advisor there that was the top guy? Erzag. Where did he go? He jumped ship. And Rahm Emanuel, he jumped ship. So I believe that they know that there's no salvaging this economy. Things are going to get out of control, and they will do, and they're planning now. And it was, again, by statements, you know, by their deeds you shall know them, that they're preparing the people, making plans to keep the people under control.
Next up, we have Peter in Pleasant Hill, California. It's your turn. You're on with Gerald Celente, Peter.
George, good evening. Gerald, I think you're brilliant. Before I ask my question, I wanted to let you guys know the Secretary of the Air Force was found dead in a field in Washington, D.C., and I believe it was from what I saw on the shadowofthedarkness.com. Saying that Russian intelligence said he was going to go public with the reason why the bird die-offs occurred, and it was because the American government was testing weaponized gas. I was just wondering if you heard anything about that.
Yeah, no, I've heard it, but again, you know, you don't know whether or not these things are true.
Well, it kind of makes sense considering the the injuries related to the deaths of the birds with internal injuries, but no external injuries. A gas would do that.
Yeah, sure. No, I put nothing past them, of course. Oh, and by the way, when we're talking about the loss of liberties and the FEMA camps, one of the top trends that we'll have in the Trends Journal is going to be loss of liberties, and it's being written by Paul Craig Roberts. And, of course, he was the former Assistant Treasury Secretary under Ronald Reagan, and he's very, very well-versed in that field. I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, very good. Gerald, you know, with all this that has been going on, what keeps even someone like you sane? I mean, does it bother you?
Well, of course it bothers me, but, you know, I don't take this personally. You know, people ask me, why do we do what we do? And I'll tell you in a nutshell, when people find their individual greatness, then they will no longer accept mediocrity.
Right.
And that's what the work of that's the work that we do every day, every day, every day. We get letters from subscribers of people listening to us to say how much we inspired them. We get letters of people how they changed by being awake, how they changed and what they're doing to make other positive change, like what you're doing with that children's fund, which, by the way, I also want to donate to. Those are the kind of things that bring about positive change, and it's what we call the 20% solution. We believe that if 20% of the people that really care, and for moral reasons, morals don't change, values do, then we can have the kind of country that we used to have and that we can have again, and even better. Then that's the kind of thing that we write about, too, with the American Renaissance, a time for quality and beauty to be. Look at the old buildings. There's a you could put Google up Detroit derelict buildings, and they show you all of these buildings going into the dust in Detroit that were built in the 1900s. That was so artistically created.
They were gorgeous.
Yeah. Right? Why can't we have that again?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's my hometown too, Gerald, and I mean it pains me. See what they're doing there. Let's go to Wayne in Fairbanks, Alaska. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George and Gerald. Great show tonight. And George, before I ask my question, when you were a public information officer in the Air Force, did you ever make it to Alaska?
Navy, no, never Alaska.
Okay. Gerald, you're right on, man.
Thank you.
And you've touched on so many topics. I like what you just said about, you know, if 20% of the people, just 20%, and I think that would be considerably more than the percentage that participated in us becoming a country a couple hundred years ago. But, I couldn't agree more. And isn't that what we all tell each other and slap each other on the back and say we're Americans? That's supposed to be what it's about, right?
That's right. But, and, you know, my motto, by the way, for 2011 is break the chains. Until we break the chains, we really won't be free. Buy local and bank local. And buy American everything that you can.
Yeah, and getting, you know, on that, and that's part of what I wanted to ask you. You know, it seems to me to start turning course in the country. We've got to tell corporate America, besides our bureaucrats, but corporate America, that we've had enough outsourcing, that we want to reindustrialize the United States. We want to start putting more people back to work. And when you were talking about the quality of the food supply in particular, but specifically the question I had for you tonight, you were talking about the dollar and how it's losing value and inflation. And I've always wondered, tell me how far off course I am here, but looking at the way the finances, world finances are today, it seems like if they're going to devalue the dollar, and if inflation, we're just basically printing money out of thin air with nothing actually behind it at all. So why do we allow the value of goods to remain as high as they are? If they're going to devalue the dollar, if all currency is going to be devalued, then shouldn't the cost of goods come down with it?
No, because of supply and demand with it. And you have a voracious China that's eating up so many of the commodities. And again, when you look at food, as I mentioned, you look at the population numbers. I mean, we've added what? As I said, a billion people in just 10 years. Yeah. So you have, it's also a supply and demand issue. It's no longer that 1950s, 60s, 70s model anymore.
But the demand, you know, okay, we've got the population growth, but as long as the fear factor doesn't take over and people start hoarding, and especially the poor,
but they will.
It's not even the hoarding. It's what's going into the marketplace now and what's being consumed. And again, you're looking at it's been the news for the last couple of days in the business news. You look at the demand in food and the prices, and they're just not meeting it in a lot of the categories.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a sad thing that the small farms, I think it's a very sad thing that, once again, we the people are allowing the bureaucrats to pass any legislation they want. And in particular, what you were talking about, the American small farmer being gobbled up. And I understand that there's large corporations worldwide that are buying up farmland in Africa. What have you heard about that?
Africa is the new battleground for resources, and China is making huge inroads in there, and what you're seeing going on in the Ivory Coast, all throughout the area. Now, China is really the next battleground for resources, but again, they're not going to be enough there to really make a difference. And when you look, by the way, this is something we're writing this today and getting the Trends Journal ready for publication. When all this really started to change was around the 1970s. And it really came under a guy who was, maybe many people may remember him for something else, Earl Butz, and he was the Secretary of Agriculture.
Yeah. Yep.
And his line was, get big or get out. And that became the overriding philosophy in this country, because they dismantled laws one after another, Robertson-Patman, Sherman Antitrust Act, that prevented the bigs from gobbling everything up. This isn't new in America. It was called robber barons at the turn of the last century. In the 1900s to the 20th century. And they put these laws in place to prevent this from happening. And when you go to a Walmart or a Home Depot, every time you go there and look at all the different departments, remember that at one time in America, there were shopkeepers that used to have hardware stores and dress shops.
And they would go and get what you wanted. You would just tell them and they'd go all over the store. Remember?
Exactly. And that's what made our country so different than other democracies, is that we had that thriving middle class of entrepreneurs and innovators. They sold us out, not only with Robertson-Patman and Glass-Steagall, but with NAFTA and other acts where they've given it all to the bigs.
We're going to come right back with final phone calls with Gerald Celente in just a moment. On Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Steve Quayle joins us, and he'll try to scare the heck out of us before I lighten things up a little bit on Friday with open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Gerald Celente right here on Coast to Coast AM. Gerald, how did you get involved in trend tracking? How did that all start for you?
Long story, but really happened when I was in Washington. I used to work between Chicago and D.C. as a government affairs specialist, and the Iranian conflict began. And I had been following it for years. I knew how the U.S. overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953. And you know who the oil company was? They had a different name then. It was Anglo-Iranian, now BP. And they nationalized it. And then the Shah was a brutal dictatorship. People forget this. But anyway, so when the revolution began, I knew it was real. because I knew the hatred that was building up. And then Jimmy Carter came back, I'll never forget it, from visiting the Shah and his wife on New Year's Day. He spent New Year's Eve, he spent with them. And in those days when the president came back from an overseas trip, it was a big deal. And he announced to the American people that the Shah was the island of stability in the Middle East. And at that moment, George, that's when I became a political atheist.
Yeah.
I had worked up in the New York State Senate. I was the assistant to the Secretary of the Senate, and I'd been in D.C. for several years throughout the 70s, and I knew enough about politics. And I knew that this thing was real and it was going to be chaos. So I started buying gold, investing in gold, and then I started buying oil futures. And I made enough money to quit my job, and I realized that current events form future trends. And if you could look at them without an ideological perspective, not the way you want them to be, hope they'll be, wish they'll be, but for what they are, you can see the patterns. And then I expanded it and started making connections between different fields, realizing that, no, you can't only look at politics or the economy. You have to look at geopolitics. You have to look at the family, social change, environmental. And then I kept expanding and expanding it, always with the premise that all things are connected. And I began that in 1980.
Perfect. What's new with the website?
Well, the newest thing is, of course, the top trends. And people could go to the website, by the way, trendsjournal.com, and you can see the outline, a preview of what we see coming ahead. But also, we're expanding. When you get the Trends Journal, of course, you remember George Carlin. Well, now his brother Patrick happens to live right near us, and George used to call Patrick his older and wiser brother. So we have Carlin's Corners. We have a lighter side of trends, and we also have videos of trends in the news. So we're expanding the Trends Journal to get many, many different aspects. And another one's going to be, George, because people say, oh, I'm a gloom and doomer. I'm not a gloom and doomer. I look at things the way they are. Again, not the way I want them to be. But we also have Living the American Renaissance, and that's what we're pushing for. We're pushing for the American Renaissance has begun. So we're going to also have videos on people that are living the Renaissance, that are taking new directions, and again, moving into quality and beauty. And again, you being a Detroit boy, you remember what that state, the train station used to look like, and all those other beautiful marvels that we used to build. Let's bring it back.
They did it with all the old Fox theaters. Why can't they do it with everything else, right?
Exactly.
Let's go back to the phones. Randy in New York, New York, you're up with us. Go ahead, Randy. Thanks for holding.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello, Randy.
Good evening. The real question is, I think you put your finger on it before, how much is enough? The American people must do something which they've only done once before in their history. The real hope for this country lies in a revolution. Now, I'm not talking about rioting, violence. It's, you know, heaven forbid the congestion, the crowds, no hand-to-hand combat. This country is too fat and too lazy for that. It's quite possible that this government can be taken down without firing a shot, without violence. And I made that same prediction on January 1st on Ian's show. And I heard your last guest basically confirm my prediction.
Well, we came out with a trend alert about a year and a half ago, and we said the American Revolution has begun, and we're calling for an intellectual revolution. So we're on the same page. It's not going to be fought with guns or bullets or riots, and there is enough brain power. And you know, I had a friend of mine. He's in his late 80s, and he left the Czech Republic during when the communists overtook it. And he said to me, if the people only realized how few people were really communists and how easy it could have been overthrown if they had only all worked together. And it's the same thing with the political parties. They make them appear big. It's a presidential reality show. Politics, as they say, is show business for ugly people. This is all a show. The people have the power to reverse the trend. I agree with you 100%. And it's, again, it's taking action and doing something, whether it's supporting whoever you believe, whatever fund you believe, like George's Child Fund, to do something positive to make the change rather than just talking about it.
Let's go to our Skype line. It's Brett in Plymouth, Ohio. Hey, Brett, go ahead.
Hello, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a listener 15 years, but this is the first time I called the show since you took it over.
Well, I'm glad you got through.
Yeah, thank you. My question is about currencies. I know everybody's running scared of the U.S. dollar. The information I'm getting is that the two strongest currencies in the world are going to be the Swiss franc and the Norwegian krona. That's my first question for Gerald. And also, is the Iraq, a lot of people in this country are expecting to be revalued here shortly. I wonder if you had any comment.
And what was your last one, Brett? You were breaking up a little bit on that one, your last statement.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my last question is the Iraqi dinar. Many people are expecting a revalue here shortly this year.
Yeah, I've heard about the dinar now for about 3 years, and to me it's a scam, and I wouldn't put a penny in Iraq. That's me speaking. I'm not giving financial advice. As for the Swiss franc, if you've heard me over the years, I've been talking about the Swiss franc forever. To me, and I'll tell you why. And it was what George was saying before about dictators leaving countries and dumping their money into Switzerland. The Swiss are the money cockroaches of the world. You can have a world war going on around them. The dictators, the thieves, the con men, the money launderers, they all need to put their money someplace, and Switzerland is that place. So I'm invested. I'm heavily invested in gold, and I'm all and have been since 2001. I've been buying gold actually since 78, but 2001 when we call the bottom of the beginning of the gold bull run. And the rest of my money is in Canadian dollars. And I also agree with you with the Norwegian krona, because they have a lot of oil in a very small country, and Swiss francs. So that's the way I look at it. But as for the Iraqi thing, to me, you know, that's just too much internet noise on that one. And to me, it looks like a scam.
Jake sends a text message in from Wisconsin, wants to know, would it be smarter to give up your cash to pay off loans or save the cash and just make your payments?
I would say, for me, and only speaking for myself, and of course, you know, I have, you know, debt. I pay it off with what I have, and I want to have cash on hand in different ways, so I wouldn't be caught short without it.
So you don't want to deplete your cash.
No, because you never know when more is going to come in.
I made that mistake about 20 years ago once. I kept paying things off like crazy, and though I had minimal debt, I had no cash. And so when I needed the cash, I was screwed, Gerald.
Yeah.
So you got to always have a reserve. Let's go to Rensselaer, Indiana. William's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, William.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, got a question for you. I applied for that housing affordability modification through the U.S. government. I did my homework, followed it. I met every single criteria on it. There was nothing I could not qualify for. Applied with my mortgager, U.S. Bank. They said, oh, yeah. Well, 6 months later, you're denied. You didn't do this. I go, well, yeah, I did. And who, My question, just in a nutshell, who benefited from that? Because I know so many hundreds of people had applied for it, and nobody got approved for it. I'll take my answer off there, and God bless you guys. Thank you.
All right. You know,
well, it was the big lie of the TARP program. If you go back and you go over the videotape, as they used to say, and you hear former Secretary of Treasury Henry Paulson under Bush saying that that TARP was for this reason. And here's what they promised. Between 3 and 5 million homes would get adjustable. They get their mortgages adjusted. Under 500,000 have. Who benefited? The Goldman Sachs gang, the Merrill Lynch mob, the Citigroup criminals. That's who benefited. This was never meant to help anybody out other than the too big to fail.
That's right. It was made to modify them, not us.
That's right.
Let's go to
a big lie.
Tracy's in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hey, Tracy, go ahead.
Hey, it's an honor to talk to both you guys, George and Gerald. Sounds like you already answered my question earlier. I was going to ask, what do we do about this mess? You said action, not talk. Well, I'm going to hit your website, and we got Steve Quayle's website. I've been listening for 10 years to Coast, and it's woke me up. But now how do I get the rest of the people I know to wake up? You know, how do we get them to think we're not crazy or conspiracy theorists or something?
Well, you know, there's an old line out there, and it's controversial, so I'm not going to say it definitely, but it's attributed to Jesus Christ, and it goes like this: I can heal the sick, I can make the lame walk and the blind see. I can even raise the dead, but not even I can save a fool from his foolishness. So there's only so much you can do.
Well, that's a good point. And I got to tell you, Gerald, I have never in all my life gone through a time period where I've seen more people uptight in all my life. They are wound up like springs. You see it too?
Yes. And by the way, and this isn't hot air or new age stuff. The people that are going to survive, George, in these times, and I hear exactly what you're saying, you have to be healthy physically. You have to stop eating junk mentally and spiritually. There's not a day that goes by. I'd be a liar if I said not a day that goes by, but barely a day that goes by that I don't begin my day by meditating. You know, I read a lot of ugly stuff all day long, and you ask me, how does this not affect me? That's one of the ways I do it. And I try to stay, I don't eat corporate food. You know, and I'm not a vegetarian, I love meat, but I buy grass-fed local Hudson Valley produce and everything else that I can. And I try to keep my mind alive by learning as much as I can. So the people that are going to survive these times, it's a necessity. You cannot be in bad shape and run the race. You have to get in good shape because these are going to be very difficult times ahead. And like the Renaissance, by the way, it was followed by a black plague. And the reason why there was a Renaissance is because the people that survived took measures to stay healthy at a time when an estimated 60% of Europe was being wiped out. So it was genius that survived. And that's what's going to happen now. There's going to be a thinning of the herd.
All right, next up we go to Bernice in Compton, California. Hi, Bernice, go ahead.
Hi, George, Mr. Valentis. I have a printout here from Business Week, Business Insider, and there are three Nobel Peace Prize winners who said we have to throw the bankers in jail or we won't recover. Did you remember that? That this is really important to understand from the point of view of our society, the legal system supposed to codify our norms and beliefs. Things that make our system work. If the legal system is seen to be exploited, then our confidence in the whole society starts eroding. And that's the really problem that's going on now.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. The game is rigged to protect the bigs. They don't go to jail. They don't do time. And, you know, when you think back and you make a very good point, look what happened to Germany. It wasn't until the Nuremberg trials and until they really repented for what they've done, what they had done, and denounced that type of life, that and admitted to what they became, that they changed. And it's the same thing here. And so that's the kind of, and we are, our legal system is totally tilted toward benefiting the bigs. You see it with these guys that get, the SEC comes in, they slap them with a fine, and there's never any criminal indictment. So I agree with you.
And they keep doing it over and over and over. Jason Santa Rosa, let's try to squeeze you in. Go ahead, Jace, real fast.
Hi, Gerald. Hi, George.
Hi.
I just want to know, Gerald, I wish I could get you alone in a room with Webster Tarpley, but I can't. But I want to know what you think about the ETs, about the extraterrestrials.
You know, I don't know enough about it to make a sound a judgment on it. But I'll tell you a very quick story. About 1983.
1 minute,
Gerald. I was going over the Rhinebeck Bridge with my ex-wife, actually after a Tai Chi class, so I was very centered and quiet, and I saw a triangular movement in the sky. It was making no noise. I stopped at the top of the bridge. The bridge authority came up and threw us off. It was 10 o'clock at night, and I said to the guy, look at this thing. You know, it was this big triangle. And he said, get in your car. It's helicopters flying in formation. And I yelled out, it's not making any noise. And then the next day in the papers, hundreds of people had seen it. So, you know, I don't know, but that's my life experience.
Yeah, they've got a few noiseless helicopters out there, but what you saw was not a helicopter.
No, I know.
All right, my friend, thanks for being on the program. Keep in touch with us.
Hey, thank you, George.
For Dave Bujenski, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.